In the north, Lombardy and Venetia, which is Milan and Venice, became part of the Austrian Empire, pure and simple. While the duchies of Parma and Modena, nominally independent, were governed by Austrian stooges, dukes who owed their power and their preservation to the Austrians. The region of Tuscany, Florence, was still independent and fairly well governed by dukes, although patriotism, or rather wider Italian nationalism, seems to have been somewhat less in Florence than in some other areas, perhaps because Florence was doing relatively well. The Papal States going down further into the peninsula in central Italy, and there were a series of Papal States, not just Rome, the territory around Rome with an army and police and a bureaucracy and tax collectors. The Papal States were generally governed poorly by very, very conservative popes and cardinals who feared the potential immorality of railroads and tunnels, opposed secularism, and proposals for national economic unification. Right after Vienna, they too were really shaken to the core, and they liked things basically the way they were as well. They agreed perfectly with the Austrians about that. In the very south, the Bourbon-ruled kingdom of Naples and Sicily, restored and protected by the Austrians, with its overpopulated third-world peasantry, represented one of the worst governments in all of Europe. The person who hired me at Lafayette College and protected me and loved me, my second father, Albert Gendebien, used to say, that regime made the mafia look relatively respectable by contrast, and Albert studied in Italy during the 1930s and knew Italian and loved every moment in which he spent there. Only in Piedmont, Sardinia, in some ways as much French as Italian in culture, did one see the beginning of middle class and liberal aristocratic rule and industrial development, especially in the 1840s, in the northwest corner of Italy closest to France. Railroads began to be thought about and developed. A wider and larger middle class developed over time. Somewhat more responsible political leadership was there. And surely the elites there chafed at the bit because, indeed, it was the Austrians in Lombardy and Venetia who were right next door. And so they felt threatened as well as unhappy with the Austrian presence and, indeed, the whole sense of Italy at that time. In short, on the eve of 1848, in terms of sound government, only Piedmont and Tuscany seemed to represent progressive developments. The rest of the peninsula was dominated by Austria, the Pope, and inappropriate monarchs in the very south of Italy. Still, as elsewhere in Europe, a number of diverse liberal and democratic nationalist and revolutionary voices surfaced in the wake of Metternich's handiwork, and most Italian patriots of any stripe agreed that the Austrians should be expelled from Italy. That was their commonality. And indeed, in the scholarly understanding of how nationalism develops, sometimes it develops largely or certainly partly because of commonalities that people have, but frequently it also develops with respect to what people do not want, external enemies. Austria was an external enemy that unfortunately was internal as well because it was right there. Perhaps the most irrepressible and romantic voice and the best representative of liberal nationalism in the 19th century was our friend Mazzini, and I like to call him my friend, the soul of the Risorgimento, whose writings and conspiratorial revolts either inspired a generation of passionate adherents or forced more moderate and cautious individuals to state their case and enter the fray. Let's listen to his voice for just a moment to see what he was all about. Duties to country. Your first duties, first at least in importance, as I have told you, are to humanity. You are men before you are citizens or fathers. Listen to that. You are men before you are citizens or fathers.